look, we have no
Let us assume a third toke, long and slow. You vaporize, and you take it in and in and in, and there is a sound like the crumpling of a plastic bread wrapper, or the crackling or the flame, and a tone, a
All right, listeners, you're listening to CUNY Co-op Radio 93.5 FM, CGLY, broadcasting live from the rainy Nelson and over the worldwide mycelium on www.cunycoopradio.com.
The gnomes have learned a new way to say who.
Welcome, this is Fane of the Cosmos, Infinite Moment. I'm your host, Dustin Sunflower, and in the studio coming up, the other renowned host, Reverend Demuzi. On tonight's show, we're going to be interviewing, probably I would be able to say, world-famous herbalist Susan Weed, who's written such classics as From the Wise Woman Herbal, Herbal for the Childbearing Years, Menopause, Breast Cancer, you name it, she has covered it. An amazing wealth of knowledge when it comes to, I don't know what you would call it, maybe eco-spiritual herbalism. And so we'll be interviewing her in the show. We're just waiting for the call from New York State. We'll also, it's membership drive time, so if you don't have a membership, you can't keep listening. You'll have to turn off the radio. No, I'm kidding. But, like, if you don't have a membership, you should, because it's your ticket to ride in this town. The discounts, the free giveaways, the prizes you can win just by having a membership are astronomical. So, if you don't have one, the family memberships are $75. A regular membership is only $40. If you're low income, $25. If you're an organization, say $100, a lifetime membership, $500. That's lifetime. So you'll be getting those discounts forever. So if you don't have a membership, you love this radio station. If you like this show, if you like having community radio that's radical and suits your cultural tastes, get a membership now. It's crucial to the survival of this radio station. And let's face it, folks, this is the only way that we get good radio anywhere, is if we create it ourselves. We don't rely upon Coke, Pepsi, all those kind of car advertisements to pay for our radio so we can listen. Instead, we get the memberships, we support our own radio station, we have our own news, our own culture, and we don't have to have anything to do with the mainstream media. We have kick-ass media right here that's run by ourselves, for ourselves. So, yes, rock the nation.
Rock the nation. Rock the nation. Rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Time and an aggressive time, a painful time, a time where cynicism rots the vine, and a time where violence blocks the summer shine. Lifetimes, go by in a flash, in a search for love, in a search for cash. Everybody wanna be some fat tycoon, everybody wanna be on a tropic honeymoon. Nobody wanna sing a little bit out of tune, or be the backbone of a rebel platoon. It's too soon to step out of line. You might get laughed at, you might get fined, but do you fear me when I say I feel pain every day when I see the way my friends gotta slay and never get ahead of bills they gotta pay? No way, no way. Some make a living doing killing, Colombian penicillin. Some are willing to play the villain, they just chilling to pass the time, pass the information, or pass the wine, pass the buck, or pass the baton. But you can't pass the police or the Pentagon, the IRS or the upper echelon. I think it's time to make a move on the contradiction. Bomb, bomb, rock the nation, take over television and radio station. Bomb, bomb, the truth shall come, give the corporations a complication. Bomb, bomb, rock the nation, take over television and radio station. Bomb, bomb, the truth shall come, give the corporations a complication. Say, ooh, ooh. Of our time. I say it one more time to emphasize the meaning of my rhyme. To rise above all the dirt and grime at the right spice, at the right time. Fuck the Constitution. Are we part of the solution? Or are we part of the pollution? Sitting by and wondering why things ain't the way we like to find them to be for you and for me. The people over there and the ones in between. Check our habitation. Are we a peace-loving nation? Peace-loving nation. I have a reasonable doubt. I think I just spell it out. There's no need to scream or to shout. The NRA just bought a man's soul. Then he jumps up and shouts, gun control. The government say that killing's a sin unless you kill a murderer with a lethal syringe. So I ask again, are we peace lovers then? Peace lovers then. Some of them slang guns when they 6 years old. Some of them end up in some 6 foot hole. This whole damn place into lost control. So I raise my voice before I lose my soul. Bomb, bomb, rock the nation, dip over television and radio station. Bomb, bomb, the truth shall come, give the corporations a complication. Bomb, bomb, rock the nation, take over television and radio station. Bomb, bomb, the truth shall come, give the corporations a complication. Yeah. Say, ooh, ooh. Say, ooh, ooh. Radio, rock the mic.
Is the way I'll express my feelings. Vibe revealed and revolved, spinning on a record. Y'all try to confiscate, take what I communicate with. It's ancient, gift to the lips, steady creating, activating, passing vocal violations to the blind plus the seeing. Human doesn't mean just being, becoming. Don't believe it, just be life it. Belongings and beloved, rehearse it or recite it while shining. Drop your guns, move your tongues, battle motivation. No times lyrics come, sometimes fun, others run. Their mouth are away, my mind's cold beaming like an early sun ray. One day we'll get the picture and all combine. Let's be talking about minds, mine and be. Become one mind. Every piece of the puzzle has its place to build the piece of the puzzle called the human race. Taking it long enough to cross the formal journalistics. Dyslexic critics put backwards to rap words. I'm sure raising my hand with questions and demands. Statements in a plan with the map of the land.
Bomb, bomb, rock the nation. Take over television and radio station. Bomb, bomb, the truth shall come. Give the corporations a complication. Bomb, bomb, rock the nation. Take over television and radio station. Bomb, bomb, the truth shall come, give the corporations some complication. Yeah.
Welcome back. This is Fame of the Cosmos, and in the studio we have Reverend DeMuzzi.
Well, I'm not quite in the studio, but I'm there in a kind of virtual way.
Right on.
And we also have, in a virtual way, we have with us Susan Weed.
Wow.
And she was received the 20th Century Award for Achievement. She's included in the Who's Who of Intellectuals. She was recognized as an outstanding person of the 20th century. She was nominated as International Woman of the Year, and she has several books that have had a profound influence on, I believe, from the people I know, a profound influence on the whole idea of natural childbirth and herbalism and herbal lore. And one of her books is in its 29th printing. That's the childbearing year. And her other books include Healing Wise, Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, and Breast Cancer, Breast Health. Hello, Susan.
Hi, yeah. Green blessings. I'm so glad to be with you tonight.
Blessings, sure. We're so glad you're here. We'd also like to mention that she is a student of the world. She's gone to the University of the World.
Yeah.
That's where you got your doctorate. No.
Indeed, the world.
Yeah.
So with no formal degrees whatsoever, you teach at a number of different universities or have taught at a number of different universities and colleges, and have even opened up your own college. Could you
high school was really boring.
Yeah.
And my lab partner, Phoebe McAfee, said to me, why don't you leave here? And I said, how can I possibly leave? You know, I'm going to go to college. And she said, well, just go to college. And I kind of looked at her and I thought, just go to college? So I did. I just left high school and went to college. So I never got a college. I never got a high school diploma. And in college, I was a mathematics major with a specialty in artificial intelligence.
Oh.
And I left there to pursue what I considered real intelligence, the real intelligence of the planet.
Nice. How do you go from basically having no degree and then suddenly you're sought after as a lecturer and speaker around the world, and what was that journey like for you?
For me, learning has always been lifelong. I'm an avid reader. I read about 100 different periodicals a month, as well as any number of books. And it gives me a very broad perspective on health and what's going on in health. For instance, I was talking to my apprentice this morning about the fact that the past head of mammography in the United Kingdom has come out and said that she really feels that it's unethical to do mammographic screening. And more and more what we're seeing is that the vast majority of women who are screened, over 95% of women between 40 and 50 and about 87% of women 50 and over who go in for further biopsies and tests because the mammograms are found not to have cancer. But in many instances, it seems that doing the biopsies and the extra mammograms really stirs things up in the breast, and that there's a spike about 3 years after these procedures of breast cancer deaths.
Oh.
Well, I can relate to that because my mom, she died of breast cancer, but it just the way the medical system intervenes in women's lives and seems to always put them under the knife or always prescribing some kind of harsh drug, or in her case they gave her the wrong prescription which caused her breast cancer to come back.
Oh man.
And so
my grandmother died of breast cancer, Dustin.
Yeah, I just feel like women bear the brunt of these kind of our medical system. They're more often, I think, prodded and put under the knife and prescribed to more than any other, more than men, I think.
Well, it's becoming a lot more equal.
Okay.
You know, with the medical profession trying to convince men that they're low in testosterone and that their prostates need constant watching after.
Yeah.
So, in general, I certainly do agree with you, but it, definitely they're trying to give men equal abilities to be cut upon. And that's not to say that the vast majority of individuals practicing medicine in this country are not trying to do the absolute best they can.
So,
but if you once see an 11-year-old girl with breast cancer, or you see a woman with metastatic breast cancer who comes in when her cancer spreads throughout her body and dies in a few months, then it really pushes you to a state where you really want to treat very aggressively.
Yeah.
What can women do instead of this mammogram, sort of like after the fact medical treatment kind of?
That's a really good question. You know, I have a book, Breast Cancer Question Mark, Breast Health Exclamation Point, The Wise Woman Way, which is written for women who want to keep their breasts healthy, as well as for women who have something going on, and for women who do have a diagnosis of cancer and may choose to use surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, tamoxifen. And what can we do to reduce our risk of breast cancer? There's some really easy things that we can do. We can exercise more. Even an hour a week of walking can reduce breast cancer incidence by 70%.
Wow.
Yeah, just what, 10 minutes a day?
Wow.
We can do it. We really can. That's quite possible. We know that women who eat plants that are high in substances called phytoestrogens have a lot less breast cancer. They have about 400% less breast cancer, as a matter of fact. Yeah. And those are, you know, good for you foods, whole grains, beans, roots, dark leafy greens. Again, we're not talking something onerous or difficult to do. As a matter of fact, I was teaching in Germany, and at the workshop center where I was teaching, the chef and I are very good friends, and he would come and he would listen in each day as I was talking, and then he would endeavor to put into the menus he was creating the things that I was talking about. And on one of the first days, he heard me talking about lentils and the fact that lentils not only have these phytoestrogens, which directly protect against breast cancer, but that lentils also contain the repair kit. And when the DNA is damaged, the immune system can often repair it if it has enough stuff in its repair kit. And lentils have lots of repair kit stuff. So he actually endeavored to serve us over a period of 4 days lentils for every meal without anybody ever once saying, oh, yuck, lentils again.
Yeah.
So you certainly don't have to do that. But you could learn to love lentils more. There's lots of different kinds of lentils, or dal, as they're called in India. Right? We also know that, strange as it may seem at first, wearing a bra does contribute to breast cancer. And my website, www.susanweed.com, has a link to a website of a medical doctor who's been collecting evidence about the link between breast cancer and bras for almost 50 years.
Wow.
Holy.
It's really quite an amazing website.
So burn it for your own health.
Burn it for your own health. There you go. Yeah. Be free.
Yes.
What I'm wondering is, like, in the kind of journey of the herbal journey, what I found with my mom was that the fear had been so instilled in her that the idea of using herbal medicines or doing anything different, she was so overcome with fear that whatever the doctor told her, that's what she would do. How can you comment on that kind of culture of fear that we have in our medical system?
Well, it's not just fear in the medical system, as you're so correctly saying. It's also your mother's fear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just a culture of fear. It's a culture in which death is personal failure.
Wow.
One of my mentors, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, wrote Death, the Final Stage of Growth. And she really understood and appreciated what she called the dying process as a process by which we matured into a kind of greater beingness. And it's so difficult in our culture to understand that at all. I mean, witness, you know, the current furor about allowing a woman who, to all intents and purposes, was dead for many, many years to actually be dead.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was... In Canada, we just couldn't believe it. Just couldn't believe it.
And so that's the fear. It's not really the fear of cancer. It's the fear of death. It's the fear of failure. And what can we do to change that is to become more powerful in our own health care. And we become more powerful in our own health care by returning to people's medicine. Now, herbal medicine can be anything from the basis of pharmaceutical medicine to simple herbal remedies that are used in the home that can be used by children as young as 3 years old, who can go out and find a Band-Aid plant and put it on their owies.
Yeah.
But surely there's also something else, too. There's a kind of a herbophobia in our culture. This whole thing. And I just read on the American Cancer Society's website today, they suggested that, in an article, that people stay away from untested herbs. It's interesting because they didn't say don't eat them or don't use them medicinally, but stay away from them as if they might leap out of the ground and strangle you.
That's wonderful. Well, you know, one of the things I think that's very confusing for people is that when the scientific tradition or pharmaceutical eyes look at herbs, what they specifically are looking at is the poisons in herbs.
Yeah.
I've been writing about yellow dock, a very common weed, and used basically all over the world for food. And yet the herbals that I have by the, you know, scientific tradition, the ones that are like out there for doctors and nurses, say, you know, yellow dock, you know, is a plant that can, you know, cause horrible things to happen to people. Pregnant women should never use it. Pregnant women all over the world use it. Lactating women should never use it. Lactating women all over the world use it. You know, and this real, like, sense of hysteria about a really common plant because they're looking at it as a source of poison, and because the way they tend to use it and prepare it and dose it increases the possibility that it will be poisonous.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at ephedra. Ephedra in China is called Ma Wang. Ma Wang has been used safely in China for over 3,000 years without anybody ever dying from its use. Ephedra grows in Utah, where it's called Mormon tea. We would not be wrong to assume from that the Mormons had brewed it up and drank it as a tea. They did. They did, and so did the Native Americans. And as a matter of fact, they probably have been doing it for thousands of years, and nobody ever died.
Yeah.
But once we take an herb and we powder it and we put it in a capsule and we try to pretend that it's a magic pill, just like a drug, guess what happens? It starts acting like a drug.
Yeah.
And then we have people dying from taking ephedra. Kava kava. Perfectly safe herb. It's been used in the South Pacific to, shall we say, make things flow more easily. You know, if you live on an island with a couple of hundred other people, you can't afford to keep grudges.
Yeah.
So we have the kava kava ceremony, where you forget all about those little human things that we get in snits about.
Yeah.
I've tried it. It's really nice.
Yeah. And everybody drank kava kava. Pregnant women, babies, old people, and they loved each other more, uh-huh. and that was about the worst side effect they had. Yeah. Some years ago in Germany, people were given kava kava in tablets, and 30 of them went into liver failure, and several had to have liver transplants. In fact, what we discovered was that it was not kava kava root, the safe part of the plant, that was in the tablets, but kava kava leaf, a known liver toxin that was in the tablets.
Oh, my.
So we also, when we look to herbs to be magic pills, then we give up some of our power and we ask someone else to identify, harvest, prepare, and dose the plant for us just as though it were a drug.
Yeah.
Instead of being willing to take some of that power back into our own hands. And I'm certainly not advocating that everybody has to make all of their own medicine. But I am saying that everywhere that people live, there are weeds. And they're the same weeds all over the world.
Yeah.
And those weeds are all sources of incredible nourishment and powerful medicine that is nonetheless simple and safe.
We have that experience here in the war on drugs where we have things like the coca leaf, which has been chewed for thousands of years with lime and used as an energy stimulant and for nourishment. But once you condense it into a white powder and make it into cocaine, it all of a sudden loses its kind of natural benefits. Same with the opium poppy.
Yeah.
Perfectly good, brewed as a tea, good for your stomach, good for colds, whatever. And then
teething babies.
Yeah, it's teething babies, exactly. But as soon as you make it into a white powder, all of a sudden it changes.
As soon as you make it into
character.
A black tar.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I don't know, the demonization of herbs. We have a tobacco leaf, which if you have a nice organically grown tobacco leaf that's cured properly, has, you know, not the effects that it has when it's chemicalized and sprayed with different burning agents and then stuffed in a tube with a fiberglass filter. Our culture seems to do that, and it seems to be going out of control. We see it with tobacco, but in the States, for Canadians, we couldn't believe the stevia uproar.
Right.
You know, like, here's a plant that can replace sugar, has no known side effects, is perfectly safe, was being used by Celestial Seasonings for a long time with no reported ill health effects, yet the Food and Drug Administration made it illegal. Like, it's a bizarre...
It makes you wonder what's going on.
Yeah, like the
when drugs like Vioxx get approved for the market.
Yeah.
So... Again, when we're taking care of our health with the simple plants at home, then we have so much more ability to actually not just cure our symptoms, but keep ourselves healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a real difference. Modern medicine is very good at curing symptoms. Not necessarily better than herbal medicine, but excellent at it. However, as many of us know, it's not particularly good at keeping us healthy. Getting better, mm-hmm. definitely getting better, a lot more attention being paid to that. But it's really a personal responsibility. I often say that over the 40 years that I've been teaching, I can look back and look to see if I've had any good ideas over that time. And I can actually see three good ideas that I have had. One is to encourage the drinking of nourishing herbal infusions. And these are herbs like stinging nettle and oat straw that contain massive amounts of minerals, vitamins, the kind of phytoestrogenics that we were talking about earlier. And I use these pretty much instead of drinking other things. So I don't drink soda pop, and I don't drink coffee, and I don't drink fruit juice, and I certainly would not take a juicer and juice any fruit or vegetable, because I know that nothing in nature eats raw food, and I would get no nutrition from it. So the nourishing herbal infusions, my students have found are really the way to free yourself from fear that you're not getting adequately nourished, even if you're buying organic food.
Hey, Susan, is that good for men, too? The nettles, the phytoestrogens and that, is that all good?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What we have to understand is that when they call them phytoestrogens, it'd probably be a little clearer to call them phytosteroids, because they're not estrogens.
Okay.
They're estrogen-like compounds, but they're also testosterone-like compounds.
Okay. Because when we hear estrogen, all of a sudden you just picture your breasts growing or like your voice getting higher. Like, what's going on?
Right. But it's phytoestrogen, okay, which means it's plant.
Okay.
And in fact, we have to have adequate gut flora to be able to ferment and create these substances. Even if we eat plants that are rich in them, if we've taken antibiotics or we're drinking chlorinated water, we may not have the gut flora that will actually allow us to convert the plant substances into hormones that we can use.
Wow.
I want to talk about another aspect of your research and your influence. I read Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, and I couldn't help but notice that you mentioned marijuana in there. It's good for quite a number of different things related to childbirth. And maybe we should start there, and then we can talk more about altered states of consciousness. Could you tell me about that? What is marijuana good for in childbirth?
It's generally difficult to talk about marijuana because it's a power plant. And our culture doesn't have much apprehension of even the idea of what a power plant is. You were talking about tobacco before. Tobacco is a power plant. And in short, we could say that a power plant is a plant that has a very strong energy or a very strong chi. And that energy, that force field that the plant puts out is in fact so strong that it can literally sweep up a human force field.
Wow.
So that we have all met people who've kind of, shall we say, been captured by tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And their energy, their force field, has been swept up and taken up by this power plant. Marijuana also is a power plant and can do the same thing if we don't appreciate that it has a powerful energy and bring our own power to bear. Then in a way, it acts like a river which just carries things along with it. In general, what I see in terms of people's use of marijuana is that it tends to act like a magnifier. I often said that if you give a bum a marijuana, you'll have a bum. And if you give Bob Dylan marijuana, you'll have a song. But the bum will never write a song, and Bob Dylan will never become a bum because they smoke marijuana.
Yeah. That makes good sense to me in a way.
Nice.
I could see how that applies.
Yeah. So it's not... the power of marijuana is not, in terms of power plants, very strong. It really can't change you from one thing into another. Some power plants can. All right. I think about the daturas.
Holy, yeah.
Which are some of the most powerful of the power plants. And how people can really, you know, completely lose themselves in it.
Yeah.
To the point of truly not understanding their human limitations.
Yeah.
So using marijuana medically is difficult because the plant itself, like any power plant, is changed by the energetic field in which it has grown.
Nice. I believe that.
And certainly that is in some way true of all plants. And pharmacy, of course, is the study of trying to get rid of all of those influences so that we can turn the plant into a drug and say, okay, you know, you take this much of the drug per pound of body weight and it will have this effect. Whereas the crude plant material, as they say, is going to have a various effect because of these various things. But marijuana, the magnifier, has even more of that. And that's true in the variations within the plants themselves, and of course variations in how they affect people. And if we've ever been around many people experimenting with marijuana, we've certainly seen that. You know, those who suddenly discover how paranoid they are, those who find out that the world is really funny. Right, so you have, you know, all of those different possibilities. I know that what I have heard from midwives who use marijuana with birthing women is that they feel that it literally allows the woman to open up to the universe and open up to the child. I also, I remember one particular midwife, and she told me that when she was first pregnant, she did not have morning sickness. She had 24-hour-a-day sickness.
Sounds like hyperemesis gravidarum.
Oh, boy. She said she was so sick. Day after day, her husband would come home from work, and she would be laying on the couch green, and she would say to him, get your own supper. And one day, after two or three months of this, he came home and she was in the kitchen cooking. And he said, what happened? She said, I finally decided it was worse for the kid for me not to eat than to take a toke.
Wow.
And that totally ended her nausea. Oncologists who use chemotherapy, and that's a cancer specialist who use chemotherapy, who put people on chemotherapy, know that marijuana is hands down the best agent for controlling nausea. And much, as we were just saying, much safer taken in its crude, though illegal form, than it is taken in its synthesized and legal form.
Interesting. I've heard this similar story from another person that we've had on the radio show a little while back. That was Wyland Curry, and she suffered from hyperemesis gravidarum, and she used cannabis and found remarkable relief to the point where she didn't even feel sick.
Exactly.
Without it, she was so ill, and apparently this illness can kill both you and your child.
That's right.
And yet the government still doesn't recognize this. I mean, this effective herb, it's so insane to me.
Well, it's an interesting mystery to, try to trace back how it is that we went from kind of a benign attitude toward marijuana to, as you say, you know, really turning it into a killer weed. And the belief that, you know, it can really change people's personality, lead them to use heroin, fry their brains, and so forth. I remember hearing that people who smoked marijuana interfered with their fertility. And I figured I would go to Jamaica and see if I could find out about this. And I have to say that from what I saw in Jamaica, where, believe me, they were smoking marijuana, I did not see any impairment in fertility.
I think we were joking about this last week, and we were saying that Yeah, it seems like a lot of those hippies, their families were pretty big, you know.
Really?
where we live, there's many, many children being born right now, and many, many round haunches and full bellies everywhere.
Everywhere.
And so we're puzzled by the fertility myth, that's for sure.
Yes. But power plants are scary plants. When we get involved with a plant that has a power that's greater than ours, as human beings, we do not sit easily with that. We don't like things that are bigger than us.
So do you have any tips for how people can best greet a power plant if they're ever, you know what I mean?
Like the best going to
way
work
to,
with one?
Yeah, to work
well,
with
the,
one.
Yes, actually there's three things to keep in mind. One is to actively recognize the power of the plant. The second one is to come with your own power at hand.
Thanks.
And the third thing is to have a ceremony or a ritual.
Yes. Right on. That's perfect. Yes.
Whew. I wanted to talk to you more about altered states of consciousness as they pertain to learning. And this is something your bio says that is one of your special focuses is to, in relation to learning, healing, birthing, and dying, and the roles of plants in these states. Do you find that altered consciousness, not necessarily through the use of plants, helps you to communicate with plant spirits?
Definitely. You know, I think that altering our consciousness is one of our favorite things as human beings. And I would even push the boundary on that because we have instances of birds getting drunk and bears getting drunk and my goats will go out and eat, you know, plants that are poisonous that make them stand around glassy-eyed going woo-woo for days. it's not by mistake either because they have to go to a special place to find those plants.
they're their best.
But you know, we can make a pretty good guess if we can look at the genetic matter in a seed as to how long that plant has been cultivated. Because when we start cultivating plants, we kind of change what's going on genetically with it. And insofar as we know, the furthest back that we have found cultivated food plants, and from what we can see in the genetic materials, is 10, maybe 12 or 13,000 years ago. But we have psychoactive plants that have been cultivated for at least 40,000 years.
Wow.
Oh,
so that says to me that it's about four times more important to change our minds than it is to fill our bellies.
Yeah.
And we know that hunting-gathering people really worked only about 20 hours a week. And they literally had the rest of the time to sit around and take recreational drugs, which, of course, they didn't think of as recreation. They thought of as spirituality. They thought of it as, shall we say, ecological hygiene,
mm-hmm.
which is being in touch with your planet and being in touch with your community at the most basic level, at the quantum level, if we will.
Mm-hmm.
As more and more we are seeing that consciousness itself, as a waveform that spreads across the brain, is triggered at the quantum level. Which is, you know, why it's easy, in a way, for us to be led astray by thoughts.
Yeah.
Because they change us so much. So what happens when we use plants to change our mind? Well, part of it is the same kind of thing that happens when we have a friend to work with. And if you've ever worked at a complex task alone and with somebody who you can respect and work with really well, you know the difference that I'm talking about. Even just to be able to turn to somebody and say, what do you think? Do you like this color? seems to really magnify our creativity and our ability. And just so, the psychoactive plants, and actually, I have coined a new term for these plants, and I like to call them realitrons, because they don't make people hallucinate. They allow people to see reality. And in using these realitrons, we connect with and become communicative with the planet that we live on and all of the living things on that planet. My interest, of course, is in the plants, but we're as equally likely to be able to have direct communication with animals, rocks, rivers, clouds, the stars. All of these things are common in the stories of Aboriginal people across the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And every group of people across the planet that I've had any contact with have some power plant that they use.
What is it? You know, I'm imagining these ancient peoples working 20 hours a week. Boy, I wish I could only work 20 hours a week.
Right?
And take psychedelics the rest of the time and chill out.
You know. You do, don't you?
No, I wish.
Okay, sorry. The rumor's wrong then. Sorry.
But what I'm imagining is what could change that? Like, what is it that got convinced people to give that up for what we have now, or even worse, what we had, you know, 1,000 years ago or something? What do you think that...
Hunter-gatherer peoples work 20 hours a week. As soon as you start to cultivate and domesticate, your goose is cooked. You now have the necessity to work to provide for yourself. Now, the trade-off there is you also have security. Because when you're a hunter-gatherer, well, you could starve to death.
Yeah.
So we cultivate and domesticate, and we wind up where we are, the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren of those people who have never known a day hunger in our lives.
Yeah.
And that was not the norm throughout the world, even 100 years ago.
So, this is a question that's really been burning in my mind, especially coming up talking about herbs. And you had talked earlier on the show about the healing herbs. Their energy is transformed by, like, their energy field, where they're grown and how they're grown. And we see on the earth right now a kind of how the Mother Earth is undergoing many changes brought on by our human contact and human resource extraction, and it's altering the very earth. How do you see the future playing in for being able to have healing herbs if we don't have a healed earth? Like, so how you see that, and then also how we can help keep the earth healed so we have healing herbs.
Exactly. Well, many years ago now, I was sitting around with Brook Medicine Eagle and some other women, and we were actually, you know, having exactly this discussion, this woe-dee-woe-woe, my goodness, you know, the whole earth is just, you know, being used up, and people, you know, are just, like, greedy, and what can we do, and this is terrible, and woe-dee-woe-woe. And finally, Brooke said, this is certainly true what you're saying, but the fact of the matter is you don't have to heal the earth, because if the earth needs to, she'll simply get rid of us. So it's not the earth you really need to be concerned with, it's humanity that you need to be concerned with. But if you are concerned with the earth, there is something that you can do to nourish and heal the earth, and that is to give her your moontime blood. And Brook Medicine Eagle called upon us to reform the hoop of the Moon Lodge, and to remind women that we are those who nourish the earth, and that when we hide and put away our moontime blood, then we are giving away the power that we have to keep the earth healthy. Now let me tell you from the other side of the planet a rather gory story that is going to have you gentlemen clutching your crotches.
Uh-oh.
In Australia, when a man wishes to become a shaman, he, like men throughout the world who wish to become a shaman, and a shaman means a woman with a drum, must become a woman in some way. We can think about witch doctors in Africa, women doctors who wear skirts and coconut shell breasts, or you know, Native American medicine men who are locked into caves and then have to tell the story of the creation of the cave, which is of course the creation of the womb.
Mm-hmm.
And who have we noticed sing in very high voices. So in Australia, the rite is a little more pointed and a little sharper, shall we say.
Okay.
The man who is initiated has his penis split lengthwise.
Oh.
Tied up around his waist so that it looks like a vagina. Once a month, these men who have gone through this rite get together and beat upon their penises until they bleed.
So to simulate the menstrual cycle or the,
exactly,
the moon cycle.
A Western anthropologist said to them, "What are you doing? What are you doing? This is nuts. What are you doing?" And they said, long ago, all the women bled together. And when all the women on the planet bled together, all was right with the earth. And then the white people brought light to the night. And once there was too much light at night, the women stopped bleeding together, and the earth began to sicken and die. And so we have taken it upon ourselves to be responsible to keep the earth healthy.
Wow.
Psychologically, what kind of a transformation happens when women bleed together like this? How does it help us in a cultural way?
What I have seen in the many, many moon lodges that I have held, because we have monthly moon lodges here at the Wise Woman Center in the Catskills, is that women of all ages start to cherish themselves and increase in their sense of personal power. And they find that those things that make them uniquely women are not things that make them uniquely bad or uniquely vulnerable. We still live in a culture that tells us in many ways, subtle and not so subtle, that women are the work of the devil. And all that comes from woman comes into pain because woman herself is bad. And many women, whether they realize it or not, have internalized that message. And they feel bad about themselves, especially where they are women. They feel bad about the fact that they menstruate. They feel bad about the fact that they have breasts. And these are not necessarily things that are conscious in the woman, but they come out in a hiding way.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating to me that when brassieres first came out, they were worn by prostitutes. And people said, no, you know, no good woman would flaunt her breasts by wearing a garment that lifted them to the skies. Right?
Yeah.
Nowadays, somehow, we've reversed the idea about it.
Yeah.
And we think, oh, it's a loose woman. And, well, that's true. If she is loose, she's not wearing a bra.
Yeah.
There's loosed, in other words, freed.
She's loose.
There was a
she's been let loose.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a South American story, too, about a man who never wore clothes. And he was like 89 or 90, and they were fascinated because he could still get an erection. And even when he died, he had an erection. And they were like, they couldn't explain how, but it kind of explains that too, all the tight-fitting clothing and the blocking of chi energy and meridians on the body.
And let's not even discuss laptop computers.
Oh, Dan.
An hour of a laptop in your lap, and the man can be infertile for months.
Really?
Whoa. Reverend Namuzi, get that laptop
off. That's hot. That's hot, you know.
Oh my God.
I actually try not to sit with it on my lap because
yeah,
I felt that heat and I wondered.
You're so right.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But what I like about the laptop is that they have the LCD screen, which
doesn't zap your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but just keep it off your lap and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
So I think we all eat plants to alter our consciousness, whether it's chocolate or soft drinks or hard drinks.
Yeah.
Right. Whether it's smoking marijuana or smoking tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
We are all interested in altering our consciousness. We want to do it. I think where we kind of run amok is when the government starts trying to tell us that some ways of altering our consciousness are all right and others are not all right.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I know that, what is it, 3 times now a commission in Canada has said, for goodness sake, we should legalize marijuana and tax it.
Oh, yeah. It's happening.
And, I mean, you know, they have looked at everything as thoroughly as they can and have not been really able to find that marijuana is even as dangerous to people as tobacco or alcohol.
Or prescription drugs.
Right. which we tolerate because people want to change their consciousness. I mean, we always tease that you can tell if you're driving behind somebody who's just smoked because they're going half the speed limit.
Yeah.
You know, I just do not see, you know, people smoking marijuana is going to make a nuisance on the road. If I could get everybody who took 3 drinks, you know, off the road and give them 2 joints instead, I would feel much safer.
Yeah, totally. Mandatory highway driving.
Yeah.
It seems we're kind of like running up on the hour here.
Oh my goodness, already?
Isn't that
seems
quick?
Like I've just been talking to the two of you for 5 minutes.
I know.
It's great.
It's so fun. I want to ask you more. I want to talk to you about your spiritual orientation. I have here in your bio again that you're a member of the Wolf Clan and the Sisterhood of the Shield and a peace elder, and you've also been adopted by Native American grandmothers. And I believe, aren't you also a Wiccan high priestess?
That is absolutely true, Dianic high priestess, and I've taken refuge in the Buddha, and I've been confirmed as a Catholic, and my father is Jewish, but I'm mostly persecuted as a witch.
It's funny how we tend to identify with that which we're persecuted for. And stuff.
Isn't it interesting?
Yeah.
I had a group of nurses in 1999 who called me up and wanted to book me to teach them herbal medicine. And I said, why this sudden interest? They said, oh, you know, when we get to, you know, 2000K, everything is going to just, you know, to the whole medical system is going to go down the tubes. All the computers are going to blow up. And I, you know, I didn't think so then, but hey, it was a gig, so I didn't tell them that. And then a month later, they called and said, oh, we changed our mind. And it was this kind of false, cheery thing. And I said, yeah, why'd you change your mind? Oh, well, we just decided to change. And I said, did it have anything at all to do with my being a witch? And there was this...
She said the W word.
You know, on the other end of the phone. And I said, my mother was Catholic and my father was Jewish. And I'm also a Buddhist. You could persecute me for all my religions.
Yeah.
And she says, well, it doesn't have anything at all to do with being a religion. It's being a witch, you know. And it's actually, you know, it's one of the reasons that I started calling myself a green witch. A witch is a woman whose life is her art. And whose art is her spirituality, her sacredness. And that is the wise and sacred use of the green. If we are a green witch, I'll certainly remind everyone, although I'm sure many of your listeners already know, that one of the few rules that a witch has is the law of three, and that is that whatever the witch does returns to the witch threefold. And I think it's even a lot more serious than do unto others as you would have them do unto you, because it's do unto others as you would have them do three times. Believe me, I can think of no greater check against selfish and uncaring behavior toward others than to know that whatever we do is going to come right back and smack us three times as hard. You know, black witches, green witches, red witches. Black to me is not bad. Black is another color. And certainly the idea that black is bad is the basis of all racism that I can see. Mm-hmm. And not just racism between white and black, but racism within the black community as well.
Mm-hmm.
To go back to the very first use of black magic, we find that it referred to Egypt. And it is actually what we were talking about here. And it was the Egyptians' ability to cultivate grain in the black, fertile soil of the Nile as it was thrown up onto the banks each spring in the flooding of the Nile before the construction of the Aswan Dam. And so the travelers said, the Egyptians are possessed of black magic. They do not have to wait for what is provided to them and be at the whim of the weather, but they actually plant their food and cultivate it so that they are assured of a good supply of things to eat. In Arabic, where letters, the consonants are written, but vowels are not, the consonants for the words black and wise are exactly the same. What I can say is perhaps to paraphrase a book that I'm reading now, which is actually written by the son of a revival minister, you know, and he was really brought up in the faith, you know, amen. And he, when he left home, he started having these, like, you know, wow, knock him on his bottom psychedelic experiences just out of the blue, no plants involved.
Yeah.
And he has wound up going and studying with shamans, especially the Bushmen and the Kalahari. And he says what he calls it is not God, but love.
Sweet.
Oh, that's a good one.
And that way he finds that people can really hear what he's talking about. And I like that especially because I as a woman, I have a hard time, you know, with the kind of God image that I grew up with.
We all do.
And I was on my way to Japan, I almost started a fight with my seatmate because it was right after the tsunami. And he said to me, oh, you know, I'm a Christian organization going to offer the tsunami victims the love of Jesus Christ.
Oh.
And I said, where was Jesus when this wave was destroying their homes? What a terrible thing to do. Your God has caused more death and suffering in the name of that God, you know, than almost anything.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, there is that love aspect of it, too. And so if we focus on the love and say, well, you know, let's not involve ourselves in the different rules and the different aspects, but involve ourselves with people of love, then we really know where we're coming from. And that's a lot part of, I think, what truly frightens the government about marijuana, is that it opens people to love.
Mm-hmm. Dan?
I got one more question for you, Susan, before we let you go.
And then I've got one more, too.
Okay, okay, good. So you got two more questions.
Okay.
I guess my question is, for women, and I know you've been through this, too, you have a child of your own. For women who have a child and are struggling to find their power and to have a positive influence in the world and to just basically, you know, provide their own material needs. What's your number one suggestion to these women for success?
What an excellent question. You know, it's such an encompassing question, you know, that I'm in a way answering for millions, if not billions, of women. And of course, the temptation when you write a book is to write for those millions and millions of women. And you soon learn that the path to success is to do it for one woman, to really envision one woman that you're writing for. And so perhaps that's what I could suggest to each of those women, is to do it for one person. Not to necessarily think that you have to do it for the whole world, but to let that one person and that one thing that you're doing be enough. To let it be good enough. To let it be powerful enough. To let yourself off the blame and shame and guilt train, and let it be good enough.
Holy, no, I'm just, it's perfect.
Where'd he go?
No, I'm right here.
Oh, okay.
My question is to do with indigenous peoples and their importance with herb lore and just the preservation of myth and connection to like our cultures going around the world convincing people that capitalism is the way to go, and some indigenous cultures are disappearing rapidly, and with it goes a whole chunk of herb lore and myth and the, special tendrils to that higher consciousness that we're losing. What's your experience with that, with indigenous peoples in the world and herbs?
It's always fascinating when I ask myself, are these the indigenous people? So let's say we go to New Zealand and we say, oh, well, we will be with the Maori there. And yet the Maori are not native to New Zealand. The Maori arrived in New Zealand and the Moriori were living in New Zealand, and the Maori killed all the Moriori. So now if white people come and fight with the Maori, and the Maori are very good fighters, but the white people won, how is that different? The people of the plains of Turtle Island, North America, tortured each other, made war on each other, stole the, you know, children, women, horses, whatever they could from each other. And are they indigenous to here? Well, so far as we know, they probably came, you know, perhaps in boats, perhaps over a land bridge. What about, you know, well, the people in Europe and Asia? Again, if we trace back, we have to say, well, we all walked out of Africa. So can we really say that the only indigenous people there are people in Africa? And I say this because I sent something that I had written out to an herbal friend, And I had said something about Native American use of this, and she wrote back and she said, the Native American just started using this plant this way at white contact. And I thought, yes, but that white contact was almost 400 years ago now. At what point does it become part of their culture?
Yeah.
If they've been using it for 400 years that way, I think that's a Native American use.
Yeah.
So
why don't we all be
indigenous, which means that we are from where we are. And that requires us to be rooted and grounded in the place where we live.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we live with millions of other people, we can still be rooted and grounded in that place. I think that one of the things that you're talking about indirectly is that disconnect that we have from intimacy. It used to be that every bite of food that a human ate, they knew where it was grown and probably who grew it. That every item of clothing that a person wore, they knew the animals or the plants that had provided the skin or the fiber, and the person that had cut, shaped, spun, woven, and put together that article of clothing. Everybody used to wear handmade shoes if they were wearing shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the lacks that we feel, that we can hardly even get up to consciousness, is that everything that we are eating, everything that we are wearing, all of the things that touch us on the inside and touch us on the outside, that should be this intimate gathering of nourishing to ourselves, is just dissociated from us.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't belong to us anymore. And in that way, I think we also feel very anxious, because it's so easy to take away something if we don't really understand how we got it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that leads to a great anxiety, which in some people leads to them consuming more and buying more to try to relieve their anxiety.
Yeah. What I was trying to get at is, in South American cultures,
uh-huh,
where ceremonies have gone on for thousands of years,
yeah,
relating through shamanism, through witch doctors, whatever you want to
mm-hmm,
call
mm-hmm,
it,
mm-hmm,
their connections to the plants through
mm-hmm,
myth and through ceremony, that when we lose that DNA resonant mythology within that culture. Even Maria Sabina, the mushroom curandero, said that once our culture came into contact with her, that it altered her consciousness so that she was no longer able to speak with the spirits that she spoke to before, her plant spirits and her herb spirits.
That's not exactly my understanding. My understanding is she says that what she said was that
the voices grew
the
dim.
Many people taking the mushrooms caused the Book of Life to be closed to her. But again, what I was saying was, those shamans that you're talking about in South America, before white contact, and let's give a little praise here for white contact, used to kill each other wholesale.
Mm-hmm.
Sneak up in each other, shoot poison arrows, eat each other, kidnap and kill each other. And, you know, white people, Mark Plotkin, among others, you know, and all the students of Schultes, Edward Irwin Schultes,
yeah,
have gone into that area and said, look, if you want to keep your culture, you have to stop killing each other. And you have to band together, and you have to mark out the boundaries of your land and map your land, and then we can say that you own it. Because white people don't recognize something unless it has a line drawn around it.
Mm-hmm. I get scared
And that's what's been happening.
Yeah, I just get scared when it sounds like we're making excuses for, like, colonization or, like, expansion of our culture into the world. Like, that's what scares me, is I don't think just because we have more arms and more that, just because we take them over and kill them and take over their cultures, that somehow that's just the way it is. Sorry.
Well, it is it is the way it is, and it's what they do. I must say, you know, what's really interesting and fascinating about what's happening to people now is that some of us are saying, let's not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really the first time in human history that any of us have said, let's not.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I can really hear that voice. But let's, again, let's not put ourselves down for what is and what has been. We're very territorial animals.
Yeah.
You know, to me, one of the most moving parts of the Bhagavad Gita is that the two brothers are told by the gods they have to fight each other. And they, you know, whine and complain and don't want to do it. And the gods say, you have to go out there and you have to fight each other. You both have to raise armies and you have to go out on this plane and you have to, you know, do your best to kill each other.
Yeah.
And they're like going, oh, no, don't make us do this. And no, you got to go do it. And so they go and they raise the armies and they come out on the plane and they're facing each other. And this is, you know, really polite warfare. They're waiting for the sun to rise before they start doing anything. And one of them says, okay. I said, okay, Shiva, can we call it off now? Shiva says, hey, we're the gods and we want you to kill each other.
Yeah.
I don't pretend to understand it.
Yeah.
And I sure don't like it. I mean, I hate change. Oh, my goodness. But it's my ability to know how much I hate change that also allows me to put myself in the path of change.
I just, yeah.
Face your fears, as it were.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, there are always going to be nasty, selfish people. And yet we are so constructed that we generally choose to favor the altruistic impulse. You know Mother Teresa's beautiful prayer, yes?
Do I know it?
Do you know it? I think it's perhaps a wonderful way to end.
No.
People are often unreasonable, she said, illogical and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people will accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you're successful, you'll win false friends and true enemies. Succeed anyway. If you are honest and frank, people will cheat you. Be honest and frank anyway. What you spend years building, someone can destroy overnight. Build it anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, they will be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today, people will forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have. It will never be enough. But give the world the best you've got anyway. You see, in the final analysis, is between you and love, and not between you and them. Anyway.
Wow, thanks.
Sweet. Yeah. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your knowledge and yourself with us.
Well, thank you for having me, and I send you all lush green blessings.
Yeah, we send you blessings too. And if you're ever out this way, we have beautiful mountains and lakes here and old growth forests and all kinds of beauty.
You're in California, yes?
No, we're in British Columbia, in Canada.
Oh, you're all way up in British Columbia. It is gorgeous up there.
Yeah, and in the mountains in the Selkirk Range. So if you're ever out this way, you've got a place to stay.
Oh, thank you so much. While we're chatting, was this recorded or is it just broadcast live?
It's uploaded on AINFOS, the radio network in the States.
Uh-huh.
www.radio4all.net.
So it's on the web?
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's live broadcast on the web and it's uploaded in the States on that.
So if I wanted a
copy.
Yep.
You How could I get that? I have to get it off the web?
Ask your daughter to go to... No, I'm kidding. Ask her to go to www.radioforall.net.
Will you email her that info?
Yeah, I will. I will.
Thank you so much. Don't ask her to do it. Just email her the info.
No, I will.
I'll handle the asking.
Great, okay.
Thank you both so much.
Okay, blessings.
Okay. Good night.
Yeah, good night.
Wow, that was great, Dustin.
Dan, I'm freaking out here, buddy. What's the herbal cure for goosebumps?
I don't know, but that last prayer there was a super good one.
Yeah, good way to end it.